greetings. Welcome to MERS Monday, the official podcast of the MERS Political Newsletter. I'm Kyle Malin, joined by Craig Mauger, Lauren Gibbons, and the boss, John Roering. Sarah Hubbard from Acuitas will be joining us here in a few minutes. This is our lame duck primer. We all got some 4 days of rest now to gear up for these last 3 weeks of session, between 9 and 10 days, and hopefully that will be it. The big elephant in the room, obviously, is going to be the road funding package, Craig, and it looks like in the House that they're positioning themselves a little differently. This is not going to be a rubber stamp for the governor as far as getting his package through that would include a gas tax increase.
No, I mean, I think the House Republican leadership has already said, you know, what the Senate has sent over most likely is not going to fly in the House exactly as it was sent over. So the question is, what kind of changes are they going to make as a compromise between the two chambers? We saw kind of the initial kickoff that Bulger put out last week about his newest plan, and there's a lot of question, is Bulger serious about that plan? Or is Bulger kind of posturing or taking a position to get ready for the compromise that could happen, maybe giving himself a little better position for that discussion?
Or is it possible that this is kind of a scare mechanism? Because when you talk about phasing out this, where the current funding goes for the sales tax on gasoline, all of a sudden you get local governments excited, you get school districts excited, and then they put pressure on the lawmakers saying, whoa, 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 don't go down this road because down the line we're going to get gutted on this.
I think that's very possible. You know, hey Dems, if you don't want to, you know, negotiate in good faith on a road funding solution, we have this other plan that the Republicans like a lot, and we could push this one forward. I mean, that could be what kind of the message is here. But I think it is worth noting that this idea of phasing out the sales tax on gasoline has been out there for a long time. The projections that Bulger is now basing his new plan have been out there for a long time. So I just think it's interesting that now all of a sudden that this is coming up. I think the timing is pretty interesting as well.
John, it seems to me that we could have a situation where we could have actually, this could be the beginning of maybe the development of a ballot proposal type thing.
It's certainly a possibility. They could do it as a two-part thing where you come up with a temporary solution with a sales tax on the ballot down the line. I do think, though, at the end of the day, that the sales tax on gasoline, having that go away, is going to be problematic, because at the very end, you're going to have a big push from education. We've got Mitch Bean doing analysis for it on that proposal for us right now. And if over the period of time, it takes a lot of money out of schools, so there's going to be a big battle over that.
Well, particularly if the economy doesn't improve. So, you know, you can make the argument, well, if the economy improves, then everything's going to be hunky-dory. But the economy doesn't improve into perpetuity. It goes up and down,
goes up and down.
And so while the economy's improving, things might look okay. But when you get into the out years, I think we saw that before when we were phasing out the income tax. Remember when we had the income tax drop? It went from, what, 4.35 to 3.9, and then it got to 3.9, then the economy tanked, and whoops.
We made a mistake.
We got to increase it back to 4.35 now. How about that? And that's kind of the danger that they're working on here.
Yeah, I mean, we can just look back to the personal property tax reform that just happened here. It was an example of all sides coming together, pushing a ballot proposal, and getting it through with overwhelming support. Maybe they feel, hey, we did that one so well, maybe we can do this thing with the sales tax, increase the sales tax, replace some of the revenue that's going to be lost to locals and schools by directing this money to roads, and everyone's going to be happy with this new solution. And I think it's important to point out, again, as we reported earlier in November, what's become the new Bulger plan was circulated to House members. It was on a sheet listed as Plan 2. Plan 2A was going to the ballot and asking people to approve a sales tax increase to backflow this money.
And if we do go to the ballot, there's also this possibility that we could have a Proposal A type situation here. You either pay higher gas taxes, or you go ahead and pay a penny more on the sales tax. But either way, you got to pay more.
I'm assuming what the business community and the administration would want. So you have a solution no matter what. It's either the legislature's approved solution, or the people come back and they approve a penny in the sales tax to make up the difference and wipe away what the legislature did.
And we do have history in this state doing something of this nature. 20 years ago, we had a sales tax expansion on the ballot along with a property tax. You can either get property tax relief and a sales tax bump, or residents pay 1.4 percentage points more on their income tax. Folks said, let's do the sales tax.
Mm-hmm.
Lauren, it seems, though, that they would have to do some type of increase, though, because the Senate has already taken the plunge on this. The Senate has already said, we got to raise new revenue. And if the House goes ahead and says, well, we're not going to raise any revenue, we're going to go ahead and just base it on an expansion of the economy, they're going to have to feel a little slighted, aren't they, that they're going to have to take the plunge on something that the House is not reciprocating.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, they did put out their plan. It was pretty clear based on, you know, based on some of the other votes that were taken. You know, the sales tax initiative in the Senate was not passed. Like, it was, you know, it's the second time it's come forward, and it's pretty clear that the majority of the Senate wants to increase the gas tax at this point in time.
So this is the biggest issue for sure, but that doesn't mean it's the only issue. So Craig, you've compiled a list of some of the 25 things that could be taken up this lame duck. And four of them had to do with education, but all four of these things could be balled up together. Let's talk about that.
Yeah, there seems to be some thought among lawmakers and those at the Capitol that all these education issues could be tied together in an omnibus format. Maybe here's a whole package of ed reforms, and they could be sold that way to lawmakers. You either vote for them all or you vote for none of them. And maybe in that way they could get the support they needed for each of the bills in the package.
There's a caveat, though. Those are all House bills, though, right? So they haven't been over to the Senate yet.
Some of the bills are in the Senate currently.
Okay.
And, yeah, for instance, the educator evaluation bills passed the House and are now in the Senate. The EAA bill, or the so-called EAA bill, as I should say, yeah, has gone back and forth between the two chambers like a ping pong ball. The third grade reading standard and the ADF school grading bill, those are both in the House and haven't gone to the Senate yet.
And so while we also have those education bills, we also have some big bargaining chips that are out there. Lauren, what are some things that the Senate wants to get passed that could be used by the House as bargaining chips?
Richardville has definitely been interested in getting the Certificate of Need passed. He's been pretty clear about that for the past couple months. And, you know, it doesn't seem like he has enough votes yet. They've caucused a lot about it, but, you know, it hasn't come to the vote at the end of this session yet, but you know, it's still something that's out there. He's also interested in getting some of the film issues passed, so that's something that could end up becoming a bargaining chip at some point, because it seems like he really wants to get that through.
And we also have the Farnham building now, too, that's on the equation. Different proposal with the Farnham building now. Now we're talking about just giving it over to DTMB, letting them sell the property. But again, that is something the Senate wants to take off their hands. What are some things that the House wants that the Senate could use as bargaining chips on the House, Craig?
Well, I mean, I think there are all kind of bargaining chips out there. If you look at the bills on the calendars in the two chambers, I think there's a lot of bills that are could be potential bargaining chips of all shapes and sizes. But the Electoral College proposal is one that comes to mind. Pete Lund, a key figure in the House, really wants to champion Electoral College changes in the state, and it's sitting out there. Richardville has been hesitant to really make any concrete statement on what he wants to do with that one.
We've got the medical marijuana bills as well that have been sitting over in the Senate for some time. I don't think they have the votes for that.
Yeah, they've been there for what, a year now almost?
And then the sentencing reform bills that Hovind has, that's something, too, that's going to take a lot of education, we shall say, in the Senate in order to get those things to move.
Yeah, exactly. The sentencing bills are also kind of the final legislative thing that Joe Hovind wants to get done. If the House does approve them this coming week, they would go to the Senate, where it would be difficult, I think, for the Senate to wrap their heads around this in this short of a time period. So it seems like the path for those bills is to get wrapped up into some type of negotiation about a larger subject.
John, e-cigarettes, that's also a potential that's out there. We've got all these different odds and ends that get thrown in here at the end. It's what makes lame duck so fun, isn't
it? Oh, and then there's always the stuff that we don't know about that comes out at the very last minute.
And there's always one of those.
And there's always at least one of those. There's always at least one of those. Somebody's got some special carve-out they want in some tax code somewhere, and all of a sudden, boom, in the middle of the night, it's getting done. So.
Well, and we just saw that just a couple weeks ago here with the Tesla bill. It seemed like maybe this was a bigger deal than initially thought, and there was some dust-up on whether the governor should sign it. And these are the types of things that get slid in an amendment.
And it's frankly one of the best things, that, well, I don't say best, you might argue about that, but the funnest things about the legislative process is because one little change in one phrase can mean an awful lot of money to various interest groups. So, It gets very entertaining.
Joining us now for the podcast, Sarah Hubbard from Acuitas. Thanks for joining us today.
Thanks for having me. I love being here.
So no coffee today. You bring the Diet Coke.
Yeah, Diet Coke every day. That's the breakfast of champions.
And it's not even lame duck yet. That starts tomorrow.
Yeah, that'll be a two Diet Coke day.
Well, let's talk about lame duck here. This is kind of our primer edition for lame duck. And is it just me, or does it seem like the lobbyists come out of the woodwork when it comes to these last few days in December?
I see lobbyists I haven't seen all year during lame duck. They come to the Capitol to keep an eye on things and report back to their clients. It's amazing how many people are actually lobbying this time of year.
Why is that?
You have to look out for your clients and look out for your organization like no other time of the year. I think a lot of people wake up on Friday morning and they don't realize what just happened to them. They read about it in MERS.
And is this just because this is the legislators' last throw, you know, legacy pieces that they've been sitting on all year, they've procrastinated on, or they just haven't been able to get movement on? Now is the time to make that last push?
Yep, there's a lot of legislators with an agenda and a last gasp before they get pulled out of the chambers with screaming and kicking and yelling. So they want to get things through. They want to do things that might help certain constituents, or that might help them in the future, maybe, might help them come back to the legislature someday. So there are a lot of small issues that can get tucked in these bills this time of year that are a little under the radar, but there are some really big issues, too, that might pop. You can't go home until the very last bill is finished.
Sarah, you've been lobbying now for how many years?
I've been at this since 1994.
Wow. So give us a good story from the last 20 years or so.
Oh, the best stories we can't really talk about, Kyle.
All right, tell me the best story you can talk about.
Yeah. You know, there have been all sorts of things. There just are, I mean, I worked at the Detroit Regional Chamber for 17 years, and the thing actually there that would provide us the most pain is how the legislature dealt with the Mackinac Policy Conference. It wasn't necessarily lame duck, but it was how legislators wanted to go to Mackinac and, you know, were jealous of their colleagues when they couldn't get to go early in the early days. And but in lame duck and legislatively, really what's the tough thing is when, you know, you stand out there, you're trying to get a bill passed, the leadership tells you, well, you got 40 votes to go, and then your client says, all right, let's get at it. And take some time, let me tell you, to talk to 40 legislators. It's like deja vu all over again, you know, 40 times in a row.
You know what I've always found interesting is the number of lobbyists who pack in there trying to get something through, but they're not always trying to get things through. They're trying to, in some cases, defeat something. You know, one of my favorite stories is standing out in the lobby. It was late at night. Rich Studley was out there, and I asked him, what are you trying to get past right now? And he goes, nothing. I'm just trying to kill and shoot cats and dogs.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's a lot of that, isn't it?
Absolutely. We're spending more time on defense than we are on offense right now. So looking out for bad bills, looking out for bad efforts, bad amendments, bad legislation. There are a few things we're working on trying to get through, but really, as much as anything, it's a do no harm in this three-week period.
So in order for something to get pushed, though, there has to be another lobbyist out there who's trying to push something that you find you don't like. So there's a lot of competition going out there in that lobby, isn't there?
Oh, yeah. Luckily, some of my best friends are the competition. So, you know, we're able to keep things fairly friendly in our competitive nature. But there's a lot of strategy now, a lot of trying to outfox the competition. And you have to keep an eye on everybody. And sometimes it's just a matter of being present and watching people and what they're doing and giving them the evil eye.
Is that right?
Yes, it is right, actually.
That's kind of interesting.
Well, you know, you can learn a lot just by standing in the Capitol and observing what people are doing. You know, people who are actually there working and seem to be trying to actively get their bill passed or get their, you know, whatever their issue is, get it brought to the floor. You can find that out just by watching their activities, not even talking to anybody sometimes.
So it's almost like playing poker in a way, isn't it?
Yeah. Yeah, we ask a lot of people, so what are you doing here today?
And you know what? I find myself asking folks that too, and sometimes they're honest and sometimes they're not.
Right, and it's those ones that say, oh, nothing, that you have to look out for.
So as we're going into this lame duck session, well, how about for yourself here? What are you watching for?
Oh, we're watching practically everything. We have client interest in lots of different things. They're everything from certificate of need to e-cigarettes to tax issues. You know, road funding is of interest literally to everybody, whether mm-hmm. because everybody has to buy gas in the state. So that's certainly a big one. And I've never seen momentum like this since the last time the gas tax was increased. So, but I think that could have the effect on other legislation of taking so much time and energy out of the legislature that some of those issues we're hoping don't come up just actually run out of time because road funding's in front of them.
Well, and that was what I was going to ask next, because road funding seems to have sucked a lot of oxygen out of the room already. You know, Craig Mauger here took a look at some legislation that's still outstanding. He came to 25 bills before we just told him to stop, you know, 25 issues that are still outstanding. But you got road funding out there, and that becomes the 800-pound gorilla. Some of these other ones at the bottom just get defeated just because of the weight of the one at the top.
Yeah, well, some of those in the bottom are the cats and dogs that Rich Studley was referring to, I think. but yeah, road funding, it could be just so time-consuming from a caucus standpoint, a legislative drafting standpoint, that the days go by before you know it, and I think the leadership will continue to just sift out some of these issues that can wait till next year. The other thing with some of those issues is I think advocates around town are looking at them and trying to evaluate, will they have a better result if they wait till next year anyway, mm-hmm. with a more conservative legislature? Will they have to compromise less on certain issues? So some of them will take care of themselves, I think.
How difficult is it to get legislators' attention this time of year? Because obviously they're getting bombarded with a lot of different things right now. Is it harder to get them out into the lobby or harder to get some time with them now?
Well, it depends on if you're with them or against them. I mean, but it can be, it varies. It can be very difficult if they're busy, but typically during lame duck, there are long periods of waiting for something to happen, and then they're bored, just to available to talk about whatever is on your mind. When we have to wait for the Legislative Service Bureau to redraft amendments and draft long bills and make copies and do whatever it is they do over there, that leads to big gaps of time.
Talk about, you've been here for about 20 years now, so how has lame duck changed, if at all, pre-term limits and in the current term limit environment with the legislators?
Well, pre-term limits, just like everything, let alone lame duck, you had more experienced legislators and chairs of committees who really controlled their issues and their process. And I think right now we have a number of committee chairs that are attempting to do the same, but not across the board, not everybody. And so I think there's more volatility in the process. I think there's more chance for issues to come up at the last minute and then actually catch fire and move forward with very little planning. Whereas before, if that did happen to an issue, it might have been somebody's plan for a long time.
This is how I've always looked at it. If there's 10 issues on the table, what, 4, maybe 3, 5 get through?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there definitely won't be room for everything. But there's always a chance for things sneaking through. I think we just saw it happen a couple weeks ago related to an auto dealer-related issue. Whether you call that sneaking or not, there was something that did go through.
Oh, right, and dealing with the Tesla cars?
Tesla cars, yeah. You know, right or wrong, it's something that happened without a lot of awareness before it happened, I think.
All right. Any other thoughts going into this lame duck? You getting powered up after Thanksgiving? You're ready to go?
Yes. Time to throw away all the leftovers, get back to healthy eating, get a good night's rest because we're going to need it, and watch your wallet for the next 3 weeks, I think.
Very good. Sarah Hubbard from Acuitas, thanks for joining us today. I appreciate it.
Happy to be here.
All right, that's going to do it for this week's edition of MERS Monday. Special thanks to Sarah Hubbard for joining us to talk about lame duck. Special thanks to the Michigan Press Association for sponsoring this and all the podcasts. Lori Macanandi for making the pumpkin bread. Is that gone now, too, by the way? I was in the office.
It's definitely gone.
Is it long gone?
Yeah, she took it.
I brought the kids in Wednesday just so they could have some, and I didn't know what was actually left over. I hear that's been replaced by a cake or something now.
Yeah, there's some type of mysterious cake has emerged in the refrigerator.
Oh, is that right?
Yes.
Warren, do we have any clues on this?
Well, Jacob says that he brought it from a baby shower. I'm not sure how he got it.
I hear there's some difference of opinion on what flavor it is, though. Well, this has me somewhat concerned.
It's very questionable because Jacob brought this cake and says, "Hey, there's chocolate cake in the fridge." I go and look. There's no chocolate cake. Just white cake.
Just a vanilla cake. Yeah.
Maybe. It's What do you think?
What do you think his angle is?
Maybe it's white chocolate.
It could be.
Has it got a chocolate frosting?
No, it's a white frosting. It's the darndest thing.
Interesting. Well, we should probably talk to Jacob about this. We will solve this mystery and report back for next week's podcast. But until then, I'm Kyle Lynn. Take care.